the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
Oh, believe me, there are days, and there are many days, that this NFL team that we call the Detroit Lions make us want to stand up and shout. And you know what? It's not for a good reason. That song wants you to stand up and shout in joy. We just stand up and shout in misery because, listen, our Lions had a 14-0 lead, and then we gave up 28 unanswered points. This meant nothing to Justin because, if I remember correctly, he texts and says, "What happened? I didn't see it." Justin Marcus.
Lucky man.
Justin Marcus, yeah. Russ said it right. Justin, you're a lucky, lucky man to have not had to experience the torture that is the Detroit Lions for a Sunday.
No, I much rather massage dry lock paint into the foundation of my basement wall to ensure that that doesn't leak, kind of like the Lions' leaky defense. So I enjoyed my Sunday. I don't know. How about you guys?
I don't think Russ enjoyed his Sunday. He had hair when that Sunday started, and looks like, oh no, that's Justin, my bad.
Russ, hey, thank you.
Russ,
thank you.
It was a rough week. I mean, every weekend is rough when it's the Detroit Lions, but this one especially, because a 14-0 start, for a few seconds there, you honestly believe, wait, we might be able to win a game against the New Orleans Saints. No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, they took it away as soon as they gave it. And it was actually 35 unanswered points. Not to make this even worse, but it was literally to the point that they scored the first two touchdowns so quick that I hadn't had the chance to turn on the game yet. Yeah. But to go back and watch that, and then, oh, was I miserable when I started catching up live. So much so that I actually went and studied for the GRE instead of watching more of that game and caught the rest later on the recording. That's how painful this Lions team is. I'm studying for a test.
I only had two things on my DVR. I didn't actually have this other thing on the DVR. I'm just saying I did. I was either watch the Lions game and get caught up, or just rewatch the presidential debate. And sadly, I rewatched. I rewatched the debate. Not really.
We all checked into the bye early. Then it sounds like
bye
week part one.
Look, you go into these kind of games when it is Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara. You go in and expecting this one's going to hurt. So you can turn it on for a few minutes. Let's see the Lions maybe have a drive or two. Oh, cool, I got to see the touchdown. But then, you know, you don't need to see the rest because the inevitable is coming. It's just, is it coming in the first quarter or in the fourth quarter? It just, at what point do my hopes get destroyed? Lions didn't have a great, I mean, listen, 29 points is still pretty good in NFL standards. It's just not enough to get over the New Orleans Saints. Matt Stafford, 17 of 31, 206, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. Now, see, what's weird to me, Jay, yeah, and see, I see you shaking your head. What's weird to me is when I see 17 to 31, 206, the 3 touchdowns is great, but 206 is low for Matt Stafford. So it makes me think, oh, we must have done something else well. No, we didn't. We accumulated 90 rushing yards on 22 attempts. Leading rusher was AP with 11 rushes for 36 yards, averaging 3.3 yards a carry. That's not going to get it done. No receiver over 62 yards. Kenny Golladay, 4 receptions, 62 yards with 1 touchdown. TJ Hockenson, again, Jay, it looks like you need to get into Daryl Bevel's ear. 2 catches, 9 yards, 1 touchdown.
I've dubbed the Hawk Watch. Hawk Watch is still on. I'm tracking Hockenson every single week. We started tracking players of the week. He's still under my watch. So we'll get to him once I accumulate enough data. But one point out of what you just read off, and I don't know what week we finally get used to it, but saying that Adrian Peterson was our leading rusher after our draft for the past 3 years is not something I can get used to yet. With the talent that we have and we've drafted, that when does that become a normal thing? Because it hasn't for me yet. Well, it's not appropriate.
I'll tell you right now, and Russ, I got to think you'll agree with me here. It never should sound right. You drafted Kerryon. You drafted Swift. You have made sure that you have your young running backs of the future. It says a lot to me that in year 3, Kerryon Johnson got 3 carries for 9 yards. Your number one running back going into the season cannot have three carries for 9 yards in a game unless one of his legs is broken. And even then, he should still have more carries than that.
No, absolutely. AP's doing the old running back thing now. His yards per carry is decreased every single week. His production is decreased every single week. And we're doing nothing. The only rusher that averaged more than 3.3 yards per carry against New Orleans, DeAndre Swift. All we kept hearing about is his incredible yards per carry in college, right, and how he sets the record with all these historic players that have also passed through there. And they refuse to let him run the damn ball. What are we doing? It's frustrating. I hope we never get used to it. I hope we never have to say it again, frankly.
Yeah. I want to circle back to this because I want to ask you both this. Like, we've seen some slumps in our years of watching Lions football, but I want to ask you. But I want to ask you about this one because I said it a minute ago, going into the season, Kerryon was the number one running back on this team. No matter what, it was going to be Kerryon. Swift was going to spell Kerryon, and we were going to maybe see an eventual 50-50. We are 4 weeks into the season. Kerryon Johnson has 21 carries for 71 yards and a touchdown, averaging 3.4 yards a carry. Now, I want to ask you, because we're going to touch on this here in a minute to a further extent, how much of this is just them completely losing faith in Kerryon, and how much of this is just clear proof the people calling the shots clearly don't know what the hell they're doing right now? Jay?
So, Kerryon probably averages a higher average of likes per tweet because he's been hitting the Twitter pretty hard lately. And I don't think that's his fault. I think this is more of our coaching staff thinking they're the smartest people in the room. And they don't want to listen to anyone else who's telling them to do things. This is more the talent's there. It's mismanagement of talent, in my opinion. Because he's capable. We know it, but it's mismanagement. To sum it up.
To give you a little, and I know Russ already has these numbers, so really I'm just sharing them for my own benefit. To give you a little comparison, Swift has 12 carries for 42 yards. Adrian Peterson, 54 carries for almost 250 yards. So you can see it's not even a balanced rushing attack, Russ. It's just let's give it to AP until AP needs to sit down for a minute, and then maybe one of you guys can have the ball once, and then we have to bring AP right back out.
Right, which would have made sense 7 years ago with AP, and not now. Not AP that got cut from Washington, who Lions castoffs are starting for right now. Like, several Lions castoffs. Like, that's the state of the Washington offense. But no, I think Jay hit it right on the head. It's mismanagement. The same thing we talked about Tracy Walker before, right? He was their best coverage guy, and he was seeing less than half the snaps. Oh, he started playing, and they won. This is a clear sign, again, that they defer to veterans over talent far too often. And it 1-3. It's showing itself.
Okay. Before we move on to other things, I want to ask both of you, and I really want to ask Jay, because we started off the show talking about Hockenson. So I want to know, in your opinion, how are you feeling about the, and again, it was only one catch for 31 yards, so it's not like he's seeing a million targets, but how are you feeling about the fact that last year Jesse James didn't do Jack Diddley on this team? They are starting to try to work him into the offense, whether it is once a game or just maybe is to give Hockenson a blow so that teams don't know every time Hawk's on the field, they're going to go to him. As a Hockenson fan, as someone who is kind of jumping on that bandwagon a little bit and supporting him, I mean, do you see any reason for them to be wanting to get another tight end involved right now? Shouldn't it be get Hawk going and then we'll worry about it?
So to answer your question, yeah, it should be get Hawk going. Jesse James should have been the equivalent of AP, which should have been a backup participant on the team. And none of that is happening right now. My stock in Hockenson is tanking. Just like my real stocks right now, which are not doing too well either, Hockenson is going down. Through 5 weeks last year, he was 12 for 22 with one touchdown. This year, he's 15 for 20 for two TDs. But his yards per reception are down, and he's only had one game of 100 yards or more. and we drafted him where we drafted him. I would rather much have Ed Oliver or Devin Bush, who are just terrorizing on defense right now. Like Devin Bush, like, yes, that Devin Bush. Devin Bush had 72 tackles and 40 or 4 forced fumbles last year alone. He's got 13 solo tackles this year. Russ is loving the red wine on top of Michigan football. But
love it.
Like Hockenson should be of this Ed Oliver, Devin Bush conversation, and we're worried about Jesse James? Like, it's again, smartest man in the room. Mismanagement. It's all the things that even the media is talking about now that it sucks for Hockenson. He's got a great, you know, future ahead of him, but not when the people who are steering this team are in control right now.
And
sorry, I went on a rant. I'm annoyed.
Russ, I think you'll agree. I kind of set him up for a rant there.
You did.
But again, like I said, it's more, I think this is more of an eye thing because as I looked, Hockenson, 15 receptions for 180 yards. You look at Jesse James, he's got like, I believe it's 4 or 5 receptions for 43 yards. So in reality, or 53 yards. So in reality, not really that involved in the offense to the extent of Hockenson, but it's just that thing of we spent so long trying to find that go-to tight end, and there have been times this season and last season that you saw flashes of that in Hockenson. So it's kind of like the you've found the guy, or at least have proven that it's a guy that could be it, but you don't really seem to want to go to him, much like this running back dilemma we have going on.
No, absolutely. It's frustrating to see how much capital they put into certain positions and then not use them. And we talked about with running back, 2 second-round picks, right? And then you pick up a guy off the scrap heap, and he is by far and away the number one guy. Jesse James, Bob Quinn threw a ton of money at him and then spent a top-10 pick on a tight end anyways. And combined, what did they get last week? What, 6 targets? Yeah, 6 targets and 3 catches between them. That should be just for Hockenson, at least 6 targets and 3 catches. It's baffling. I think mismanagement is, again, the word, that you spend capital to bring people in. It has to at least somewhat conform to your usage, or else there's this chasm there between them that results in teams like this that underperform and don't live up to what they have.
It feels like feels like, hey, Russ, for dinner tonight, I picked up chili, but I'm also making soup from home. It's like, are you having takeout or are you making dinner for yourself? You can't do, you could, but you shouldn't be doing both. It's confusing.
Oh, and also I bought cucumber for the chili.
Yeah. I just put it on top. It's the replacement of the tortilla chip.
What the fuck do you guys do with your chili? Oh, my God.
Exactly. That's a Bob Quinn chili for you.
But, and you kind of pointed it out, Russ, between the two of them, 3 catches, but for 40 yards, if you're going to target these guys, we need some production out of these guys. That's, I mean, like I said, Stafford completed 17 passes, so there needs to be a little more production to, like, when you're deciding to go to a tight end, it has to result in something big, not a 3-yard, you know, chunk play. So, now, this is the one I kind of, the last couple weeks, I've been asking you guys the same question and getting that underwhelmed, overwhelmed, whelmed kind of thing. 2 weeks in a row, he had to face top-tier receivers. I think we can all make a statement that Emmanuel Sanders maybe isn't a top-tier level talent, but he's still a quality talent. Jeff Okuda, 5 total tackles, 3 solo. That's it. Not much else. It sounds weird to say because it's only 3 weeks, Jay, but at what point do you have to start wondering if this really was a 3rd overall pick talent of a player?
I would start looking at it now because this is around the same, to be fair, this is around the same time we were criticizing Hockenson because he had his one big game and then things started not smelling right. Our return on investment is tanking and it's 2 years in a row. So I got no problem looking at this now and watching it just as much as we're comparing Hockenson to himself from last year. Because from where you drafted and what you got, look around, look above you and look below you in the draft and see what's going on with those teams too. That's a problem.
I actually take the other way. I wouldn't even judge him until after this season ends. at the earliest, if not later, because, A, we know that rookie corners, that is a tough developmental curve. Usually, they suck, even if they end up being good. I mean, not everyone, most everyone, isn't Marshawn Lattimore, right, who actually shined as a rookie. Most of them are not good. Plus, what's the hardest environment for a corner to cover in? Man coverage with no pressure on the quarterback. Does that sound familiar to anyone? He was in a losing situation to begin with. He's not going to look great, but he's looked incrementally better every week. So, I'm not ready to even question if he should have been the third overall pick until quite a bit from now, maybe at least 16 games from now.
Okay. Now, I'm trying to – I know how I want to ask this. It's just putting the words together to make sense.
Yes, this red wine is delicious.
I'm sure it is. As you said, it's a tough position. It's one that I think you got to kind of let an amount of time pass so you get enough of seeing this guy to know exactly where he's weak, where he's strong, what he can do. But I guess my question being, this is a top three talent. That means that in the opinion of the Lions, when it got to their choice, only two people had been off the board. This was the best guy available for what they needed, but not only that, this was a guy who was worth that. So when you have guys below him, like obviously Tua's not on the field yet. Sorry, Jay.
Every week.
But you have guys like Herbert who's on the field a lot. Like Justin made a case, a quarterback was something this team could have used. But I'll even go in front of him. You have Chase Young and you have Joe Burrow. And Joe Burrow, for the Cincinnati Bengals being the Cincinnati Bengals, is at least showing signs of being able to play. Justin Herbert, after hearing for 3 weeks that Tyrod Taylor is our quarterback, Anthony Lynn literally just came out and said, oh, by the way, Justin Herbert's our quarterback. I don't know if anybody cares. So it's that thing of I get grading him. I get having to give him a little bit of time because of the position, but I think that that number that he was taken at immediately has to put somewhat of a target on him that – I get you're on an island. You're like, especially with this team, you really are on an island. But guess what? The best guys in the world are known for being able to survive on that island by themselves. Number three overall pick has to at least show some sign of being able to survive on an island. Now, I get it. Devontae Adams, that's a tough ask. Emmanuel Sanders, maybe not so much. I'm blanking on who we played the week prior.
Hopkins.
Thank you. DeAndre Hopkins. Those are tough asks. They really are. Especially when you're talking about the fact that you have Kyler Murray throwing him the ball, and Kyler Murray is dangerous as it is once he breaks contain. But I need to be able to see at least a little bit more out of Okuda, that he's understands what's asked of him and he realizes, guess what? You are like whoever we put in front of you, you have to make sure this guy, if he does catch the ball, you better put his ass into the ground so hard that he needs to take a break for a few minutes, because we can't have this.
Yeah, no, I agree with it completely.
Yeah,
the other
agree.
Thing I keep thinking of, go ahead. You first, my
well, friend. I was just going to say, I agree, but just not in his first five games of his career.
No,
mean, because it was a shortened off season. Like, if in 2 years we're talking about this, yes, that's a big problem. But this is so early, and this is an offseason like none of them I've ever seen. They didn't get to even do half the drills that they normally would have.
And the point to take it one step further for me is like, all right, so take Okuda out of the situation, right? Say we draft Tua. Say we took Devin Bush last year. Like, what happened? No, but I'm not just trying to talk about Tua. I'm just saying, put any of those players in this system. Do you see Devin Bush being a dominant linebacker? Like he is for the Steelers, what he would be for the Lions? No. He wouldn't become that.
I'm not going to lie, Jay. I have to disagree with you on that. I personally think he would probably shine a little bit more because his defense is so bad. He would stand out as a guy that's it's a bad comparison because I feel like we haven't heard much about him since. But Jelani Tavai looked pretty damn good last year in the time he played. Was he a phenomenal linebacker? No, but people started talking about, maybe this is a guy that's going to be in that linebacking core, you know, and, you know, helping quite a bit in the years to come. I think you get that with Bush because the talent's going to rise to the top. That's kind of why what the point I'm trying to make with Okuda. Yes, this is a bad defense. and it's been a bad defense for a long time. But when I tell you to talk about the last 3 or 4 years, give me the names of people that shined more than Darius Slay. You know what I mean? Slay, in my opinion, that's what I'm saying. Slay, in my opinion, was not a top 3 or 4 corner in the league as he was as he advertised himself to be. But the thing was, he always shined because guess what? When it's a lot of it's a lot of trash, the one little piece of silver shines through and it looks great. So I think you get that with Bush, and that's why I'm saying I kind of need to see with Okuda, because if you're going to be that third overall pick, if you want to be on this team and be a guy that we're going to start building around, you need to prove that to me. And like I said early on, I would rather see him. Because we're going to get beat, and he's going to get beat often. I would rather see him completely make a fool out of himself, going for a big play, kind of like Slay did, going for a big play, trying to get an interception, trying to jump a pass or something like that. I'd rather see him get burned, because it at least shows he has the instinct to try to make the play when it's possible. Now, play it safe. Obviously, if you have a chance to lock up your man and keep him from catching the ball at all, play it safe. But if you got a chance to go for that football, Justin, you go for that football, because guess what? As we've seen with Slay and we've seen with Detroit sports fans, one big play will endure you to this team long enough that they'll survive a couple bad weeks of play out of you, because they know what the potential is.
We're that deprived. You throw the stray bird a cracker, he's very happy for a couple days.
Crumb, I love you.
I can give you an example. We sat in my living room breaking down the draft as it was happening. TJ Hockenson got drafted. There, and if I'm wrong, please correct me. There was no one that seemed seemed more down about that pick at the moment than Justin. You did not like that pick happening. But then a week into the season, you were tweeting that we may have found the next Gronkowski.
That would be called an overreaction, and I tend to do this from time to time.
Justin, like I said, I've said this since we started this show. Everybody has their role here, and you are that kind of, hi Tosh, you are that voice. You're a Detroit sports fan. You 9 times out of 10, the take you give us is exactly what we would get out of everyday Detroit sports fans, and that's why we like it. So, but that's what I'm saying. You kind of prove my point of one big week, like Hockenson's first week, endears you. Like, will let the fans be endeared to this guy that they will survive a couple weeks of poor play before we need to see it again. It's almost like you need to recharge the battery. Well, you got it. It's full. Couple weeks of bad, it's going to really drain, and then you need to give us something big so it's reconfirming the faith.
I mean, do you remember Amir Abdullah getting his first touchdown against the Chargers? Because I do. It was week one.
Yes, I remember that.
I remember where I was.
I remember texting you about that. Yeah, no, I remember.
It's very fair. Very fair.
All right, so someone who, and as we move on here, we're staying with Lions, but someone who has not maybe done a good job of recharging the battery is Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia. We've been talking about it the last couple weeks as the season's rolled along. I want to ask you both. Jay's chewing, so Russ, will let you go first here. Did this, I'm going to call it because it is what it is, did this 35-point collapse put the final nail in the coffin that either Matt Patricia or Bob Quinn, or if you're feeling bold, both, have to be gone by the end of this bye week?
Did it? No. Should it have? Yes. Because there's already the apologist on Twitter. I've seen it multiple times already that, hey, the Lions started 1-3 in 2016. They made the playoffs. It's like, come on, guys. Yes, they made the playoffs at 9-7. Do you know how many teams have gone 9-7 in the NFC and made the playoffs since? One. That's it. That was an unlikely scenario to begin with.
Yeah.
And we're going to say, just because it's happened before doesn't mean it's going to happen again. You can't, you're making history. Good thing, bad history, super bad thing. Only the second team in NFL history, mind you, to lose at least 3 of their first 4 games after leading by at least 10 points. The other team to do it, the 2011 Minnesota Vikings, who finished 3-13. Mind you, they also had Adrian Peterson. So, hey, maybe it's him. I don't know. But And that was not just a talent-bereft team. Yes, they had Christian Ponder, so yikes. But they had AP, they had Percy Harvin, they had Jared Allen in his 22-sack year. That was a good team, but when you have something going so wrong that you're losing games in that fashion, that often, something's broken. And Leslie Frazier was the coach. Is anyone saying Leslie Frazier was a good coach? No. There's a reason he's not a head coach anymore. We've seen it before. Stop it before it gets worse. Ah.
Yeah, I happen to agree with you there, Russ. I don't see them coming out of this year. And the game itself, maybe not literally. This is like, you know, Sheila Ford is sitting up in some chair going, oh, we're done with this shit. Come, like, week whatever. But if anyone's going to help propel that message, it's the media. And, like, I've been really watching that take place. Like, you'll get your Twitter trolls who are apologizing for the Lions and whatnot. But you get people that have their blue check marks, and they're like, we're done with this. Like, this is shit. Stop wasting my time, especially in a year when we want to disconnect and enjoy our time, right? So I think it might not have been the game, but if the media keeps, like, the media is watching, they don't forget, and they keep pushing these buttons on Twitter and sending out these tweets, there's going to be, not like unrest, but like, what's a better word for it? There'll just be realization that we're going to move on to something different next year, and I hope they do that.
It's fair. And what I think is insane is, if, for anyone that knows Justin Marcus, this is a man that loves anarchy. He would fire a coach just for the fun of it, because he just loves, you know, to create chaos. He really is. You're the Joker. You're just the agent of chaos. You love it.
Thank you.
I've been saying it for the last couple weeks. If you're the Fords, and I think this is a big stretch to ask, but this might be an instance because this team has been so bad for so long. If you're the Fords, you're going into that locker room. It's just the players. There is no coach in that locker room with you. And you're saying, Bob Quinn or Matt Patricia, who's the one that needs to be here for us to be successful? If it's Matt Patricia, great. Fire Bob Quinn has to go. You have to move on. You have to bring in a guy who understands that any move you make, whether it's signing the best player on the planet or signing some no-name guy that we've never heard of but that you see potential in, it all has to be for the benefit. There cannot be any more of these step backs. If it's Matt Patricia, you fire Matt Patricia and you tell Bob Quinn you need to go out and find the coach. Doesn't have to be some high-profile guy. I don't care if it's some, like we've seen, we have one of the best special teams in the league right now. The guy who is our special teams coordinator had done a similar job, but he had never really had that. I don't care if you bring in a special teams coordinator. That's what John Harbaugh was, and he literally won a Super Bowl. He went from special teams coordinator to head coach. It worked. I don't care who it is. So if you're going to do that, you need to do it. And it's weird to say, because I think it's completely, you know, insane to say we're going to let the players pick. But guess what? The players are the ones that have to go out and play for these people week after week. So if you want them to play for you, you got to make sure the people that are calling the plays, giving them the schemes and all that, are people that they trust and want to listen to because they believe in what they're getting. Russ.
To that point, if you had done that the year that Jim Caldwell was fired, he probably still has a job.
Yeah.
Turns out the team would probably be better off anyway. So maybe you have a point there.
It's just weird. But since there is no game this week, I wanted to do a game of the week prediction on what game stands out to you most. But before I ask you, because I did ask, did this do enough to put the nails in the coffin? I want to know. You're the player. You're the quarterback. You're the running back. You're the whatever for this team. And that question
long
comes.
Snapper.
Long snapper. You're Don Muehlbach. And that question comes to you, Russ. Where are you answering? Are you answering that it's Bob Quinn? Or are you answering that it's Matt Patricia? Because, to state my case, I personally think you can make the argument that Bob Quinn has done enough for this team in signings, drafting, trying to address needs, making moves, and getting more. It's more catered to the offense, I feel. Getting Stafford the weapons he needs to say, this should be a decent offense. This should be an offense that we can go out, put up numbers. He's found an offensive coordinator who seems to understand what they have and what they need to do. So I think you can make a case that Bob Quinn has at least done enough to justify he knows what he's doing. Maybe he didn't know what he was doing when he was hiring the guy to run it all.
Yeah, I think if I had to pick, like I have to pick one of them, yeah, I'm going to say stick with Bob Quinn because there has been a noticeable influx of talent. However, not all of the talent has actually been as good or at cost as it's been acquired.
Yep.
Jesse James, like we talked about, Vitai started at right guard. He was signed as a right tackle, and we've already kicked him inside. So that's also questionable. If I didn't have to necessarily pick one, and this is, hey, instead of Sophie's choice, I'm going, hey, shoot them both.
Yeah.
Shoot them both.
Okay.
Go do something original. Ask, I mean, whoever's asking you this question, ask them back, who do I play for? And when they say the Detroit Lions, go, oh, then we should stop trying to be the Patriots and start trying to do something original. You know who? You know who's done a good job replicating the Patriots? Nobody. Nobody.
Yep. Yep.
All right, Sergeant Salty.
So I will not be forced to pick one because when it's trash day like it was today, I go into all my bathrooms, I go into my kitchen, and when it's trash day, I take all the trash out. I don't take half the trash out. I don't leave this trash to the side because it's new or it just got put. No, when things are bad, they're bad, and you take care of business. Both of them got to go. I don't want to be in the business. If I had to pick from the top, I'd start with the GM. I had to. Because then the GM will just replace the coach so he can get his guy in there. So I'll still win. So I want
anyway.
When it's trash day. When it's trash day, the trash goes out, man. I'm over it. Like I know that you guys have been longtime Lions fans quicker than me, so maybe I shouldn't be as over it. I haven't endured as much as you two have. But like when I do something I don't enjoy, I'm done. I rid myself of that problem. I want a new quarterback. I want a new GM. I want a new coach. I want a new scheme. I want a new team. I'm ready for it.
So you're shopping for what team to root for next year because none of that's going to happen for you.
I'm actually my Twitter bio says guarding my heart from the Lions. It's because I've already given it to them, so I'm patiently waiting.
Yeah, Justin, as you talked about the trash, this is the only thing that came to me, and I have to know: have you ever seen the movie American Psycho?
Yes, I have.
You're Patrick Bateman, aren't you? Except you don't kill people. Just like the most I've been to Justin's house a million times. I see it like he's so clean and so meticulous. I'm like, if a cup is not facing the right way, Justin like needs to reset his day. He fixes the cup and then starts over again.
There's no such thing as
neurotic, cleanly people you could have gone to other than Patrick Bateman, the murderer.
He's polarizing. I'll take it. And yes.
Well, what do you want me to go with? He's as meticulous as Dexter? Like, come on, man.
Monk. Oh, yeah. Monk.
Monk. Okay. He's neurotic? No, Justin is a very good communicator. Plus,
fair.
Come on.
I'm currently eating soup out of, like, another thing to keep my soup safe on the desk that I'm eating the soup on. So,
Patrick Bateman. Yeah. Patrick Bateman. Patrick Bateman. Patrick Bateman. Where is the axe, the clear jacket, and the Huey Lewis CD? Seriously, that's what we need to know. That's what we need to know.
In the safe room.
Oh, God. All right. While he's eating his soup, Russ, let's go on. There's no Lions this week, so we get a reprieve.
Woo!
But we still want to talk about it. Games of the week. Is there a game, as you looked through it, that just kind of sticks out to you as the one that you're not going to watch the Lions, so you might as well watch this?
So, kind of a cop-out because it's on Monday night, but it's not because it's Monday night.
Okay.
Chargers-Saints in New Orleans. This game might end up getting moved. I think it was to Indianapolis because of some hurricanes that are hitting down there, so yeah. It would be an extra little level of intrigue. But mostly because it's, hey, time to watch Drew Brees beat someone else, make me feel a little bit better. And watch Justin Herbert actually have the job for real for the first week after, you know, Tyrod Taylor got Wally pipped by a needle. And that's a storyline that could only have happened in 2020. So tune in.
See, what I love that wasn't the game I picked, but it was a game I looked hard at for one reason. The Chargers had Drew Brees.
Yep.
They chased him out of town for Phillip Rivers. Guess what? Drew Brees is still doing it. Phillip Rivers isn't on that team anymore. Couldn't get it done in years of having a built for him offense. Now we're bringing in Justin Herbert, who I have been outspoken about since everybody declared is going to be the best quarterback that came out of this draft. Russ, you had your finger up, but that's the thing that just I love the most about this storyline.
Well, to build on it for you, if the game has to be relocated, they're looking at doing it in Indianapolis, where Philip Rivers plays. Which
yep.
is even funnier.
No, I love it. Okay, I'm going with a little more fun one. This is a rivalry no matter what. Doesn't matter who's on the field playing for him. Every year seems to be a great game. But guess what? The Ravens look great. They look like a great football team. But there's something about this Cincinnati Bengals team that they just seem to want to try to make it tough on people. I'm not a Joe Burrow's fan, but guess what? I want to watch the guy blow his arm out throwing
yes,
it
80, you are.
80 times a game. No, I'm Justin Herbert fan. I really I am. But no matter what, this just always seems to be a game. It really does seem to always be competitive. I'm taking I mean, the Ravens are going to win this, but I'm going to take that as my game of the week to watch just because it seems like it's going to be a fun one to see, Jay.
So what's the money line on this game? So I can dig myself out of a hole.
Are you talking about the Baltimore-Cincinnati game?
I know you're taking Baltimore, but you're saying you're liking the intrigue of Burrow and what
12.
Cincinnati will
it's
do.
It's 12. Baltimore's giving 12. So it's giving two touchdowns, basically.
Okay. I'll find a different way to get out of my hole. But and that, it's not a bad game to pick. I mean, Burrow's is very interesting. He had some ridiculous scramble last week that connected for like a 15, 20-yard pass. But like he's elusive. And it's good for Cincinnati, so it's not a bad pick at all.
Thank you.
Going into mine, we touched on Phillip Rivers. We're going to touch Phillip Rivers again. I am actually picking the Colts and the Browns. That game, here's the thing. The Browns need to win their out-of-division games to compete in the AFC North between the Ravens and the Steelers, because they're the odd man out, if you ask me. Being a man out, they're out Chubb for this game as well. So Chubb's on IR for 4 to 6 weeks. And the interesting thing for me, because it's about misery more than entertainment, Phillip Rivers is a fraud, and that team is a farce. And most of their points are coming from Blankenship, their kicker, and coming from their defense. If you go back, almost half of their points are on special teams or defense. So Phillip Rivers has done that. O-line is protecting him. I want to see who's actually going to fall from grace, because one of those two teams have to, because they're not winning their division.
Okay, I like it. I looked a lot at that. Again, that's another one I looked at. I think Cleveland is a it's an interesting thing that's going on there, because for years and years, that team's been terrible, and then out of nowhere, 3-1, kind of staying in it, beating teams that they really shouldn't. I mean, let's be honest. If I had told you at the start of the year, Russ, Cleveland's going to beat the Dallas Cowboys with CeeDee Lamb, I'm blanking on their was Austin Cooper. Amari Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Dak, Zeke. The Browns are going to go out and actually beat them like 49-38. I think you would have laughed me off the show and probably looked for a new host.
Well, I mean, it's 2020, so I don't know if I'd laugh you off the show. I can't lose any more friends.
Oh, I'm
but
sorry.
But yes, that would have been unlikely, I would imagine.
It's crazy to think about. It really is that crazy to think about that this is the COVID 2020 football season. Anything could happen, and if you're in Tennessee, everyone's gonna get it. That's basically what I'm getting out of it. Yeah, I mean, we got to touch on that for a minute, because I haven't read a lot into this, but it's just from what I've heard. It was as we were talking to Dave Rieger before the show, he's the one that mentioned this to me, that sounds like Tennessee's going to get into some serious trouble, because it sounds like Tennessee broke some, did some violating of the protocols. So, I mean, we talked about it before the season, we talked about it before college started too. We're starting to see it now. People are getting it. There's a video all over of Gilmore, great defensive player for the Patriots, hugging Patrick Mahomes with no masks on. Patrick Mahomes is probably going to get COVID, which means Travis Kelce is going to get COVID, which means Tyreek Hill, you can get COVID. That's fine. Kareem Hunt, that's fine too. But Andy Reid, he's a national treasure. We can't lose Andy Reid with his big freaking screen guard face mask that they gave hockey technology to so it wouldn't fog up. Oh my God. It's just, it's bad right now, Russ. This does not, it's almost like they thought, hey, we're the NFL. This pandemic won't touch us. It's touching everybody else.
Yeah. Well, it's like they went, we're the NFL. Everything else we do ends up working out. Why should we do anything different? It's almost like playing in the middle of a global pandemic with very little to no preventative care at all. Who knew it would go bad? Who could have known? You saw it with baseball. It drives me insane that you saw other people do it and go, nah, we're the NFL. We're better than that. You have more people. What are you doing?
It's not good.
It's the mentality of, oh, that'll come out in the wash. It's like, oh, good God, no, it won't. Don't do that.
It's just, I don't know what to do here. Like, it doesn't make sense as of, these are supposed to be people that are making the right decisions to benefit their teams, and they don't seem to care about doing that. This just seems to be like, all right, shake it off, lied, you don't actually have it. I'm waiting for them to implement the college one, like LSU, where just test positive, and then they don't have to test you for the rest of the year, and you can have it, and we'll see what happens.
Sorry, everyone should just do what Denver did. Remember when Denver had their little, they thought they were the smartest man in the room, or people in the room? You'd walk through a machine that would spray liquidized, like, hand sanitizer. Like, I don't know what the term is. Like, a mist. They turned hand sanitizer into a fucking mist. Oh, if you walk through this gate, you're perfectly fine. It's like the metal detectors at Joe Louis. I walked in with all kinds of things, not illegal things, but those things didn't work. You could walk into that building with anything you want. Didn't happen.
Well, and here's the thing. Even if it works, say it worked and it killed any trace of COVID that was on your body. If you already have it, you're just going to produce more once you get inside.
Yep.
All that does is a point in time. Yeah, it'll help the spread a bit.
A bit. It's a very, very, it's a bad thing. Before we get too overworked, let's move on. Finally, I have a PGA event to talk about. Listen, the Masters is not that far away. I'm super excited about it. We're going to make our picks. We have the pairings and that. Before we do that, though, I want to talk about something because he's in one of the pairings. Justin loves him. So happy that he won the U.S. Open. I don't know if either of you guys saw this. I think Jay did because he kind of referenced it. I don't know who this guy is, so how credible this is, I don't know, but I still had to screenshot it. Ryan Lavner pointed out that the Shriners, which is this week, will be Bryson's final event before the Masters, meaning he's taking a month off to speed train and dial in his driver, saying it'll look like a missile coming off the face. And then Ryan asked the question, how much farther is it going? Bryson's response, I won't disclose that right now. I don't want to ruffle any feathers. Jay, one, why do you like this douche? Two, how much, all right, at what point can we finally say, okay, this is no longer him tweaking everything up. This is just him keeping the shtick going for as long as he can.
So, I'll answer your question with another question. The pro tip, I'll give you that one. Listen, are you going to watch?
The Masters, yes.
No, after the Shriners, when a month goes, you're going to watch when Bryson tees it up off one, and he has this alleged piss missile that's going to come off of his driver? Because the rest of the world is too.
I hate to break it to you, buddy. I watch the Masters from beginning to end every day.
You're atypical.
I'm a fan.
That's
what I'm saying. It's a shtick because guess what? I can promise you, Jay, we can have this debate as long as you want. You can watch Bryson, Dustin, Phil Mickelson, all these guys, all these big bombers, Colin Morikawa, Matt Wolf, who actually drives the ball just as far as Bryson, just in a different style. You can watch all of these guys tee off. I will bet you money. We can make this bet right now. You cannot tell me the difference in Bryson's fucking piss missile over any of these guys teeing off. That's what he said. It's going to look like a missile. Okay. You are not going to be able to go like be like, oh, that. Yeah, he speed trained. He got that down the right way. It's all going to look the same.
If someone's going to do it, it's going to be Bryson.
Yeah, because he's a dick. They showed the video the other day. The Shriner, right, so the Shriner driving range is only 350 yards long. So everybody else is hitting where they designated them to hit. And then there's Bryson on the back of the driving range tee boxes hitting over people because he needs the extra distance. Guess what, buddy? If you're hitting it 350 yards, you're okay. You don't need to practice that. That's just going to work. So it's just so bad. At some point, people have to realize this. He is doing these things to get his body in better shape and be effective. But this is a shtick. It's all it is. It's all it ever will be. He at no point is some no-name guy who only watches golf four times a year to watch the four majors going to go, oh, wow, that's some serious speed training. I need to get in there. You're 400 pounds and you don't drive the ball more than 150 yards. Speed training ain't going to do shit.
Excuse me, I'm 160 pounds. Thank you.
I was talking about Paul Vayner.
Let me give you a counter argument here. Okay. Counterpoint. That's okay. The word. Words are hard today. Sorry, gang. Put Bryson DeChambeau on the diamond. Make him an MLB player. It's the same kind of energy that sport needs too. It's the same kind of cockiness and boldness and innovation. And Tatis Jr., I had no clue who the fuck he was last year.
Oh,
he's my favorite baseball player
Beast. I want to get to Russ, but before that, I'm going to stack an argument on top of your argument. Yes, it's that swagger. It's that persona. I want to ask you, Justin, in your life of following golf as much as you can, who are the two greatest golfers of all time?
Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus.
Okay, Jack Nicklaus. I think some people would say it's probably Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus. Okay? Those two don't talk. They just play, and they beat everybody. So this little thing is more for him to hype himself up more than anything else. But Russ, over to you. Listen, this guy has already apparently reached the like pinnacle of what a human body can do, and now he wants to add on to it. You went to Ford University. You understand all this shit.
Still not a thing.
He went to U of M. Engineer, we think. We've never actually seen the degree. I think he got a liberal arts degree, but I don't know.
Right there, bud.
Yeah, I know. I mean, really, how much further can he push this thing?
We don't know yet, and that's what I'm excited about. He is somehow both Ivan Drago and Rocky Balboa. He is the villain doing God knows what to his body to push what is physically possible for a human to do, and also he's going to go train in the wilderness by himself for a month to do it. Jay's kind of right that it is a shtick and it is something he's playing into, but people love villains, right? I watch a show named Lucifer, like the first biblical villain, right? Like, mm-hmm. And it's a good show. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But people love the bad guy, right? And he is eating it up. And you know what? I don't pay attention to golf at all, but it's on my periphery now. Like, I know that people talk about Bryson driving, and it's not just from talking to you guys. I see it just in the stratosphere, right? It's getting mentioned. And we mentioned, hey, Tiger just talks. Well, Tiger also talks and, you know, cheats on his wife, and he was a bad guy for a while, too. And people still backed him, right? So someone who's got to be a douche to get attention, the things Tiger did, it's not the worst thing. Not the worst thing a golfer's done.
So now I know Eric's going to get part of this and Russ is going to get part of this. Now I need Bryson DeChambeau playing the piano at a club that he owns, drinking liquor, just like whimsically just hitting the keys and just blue, 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 I'm Bryson. Perfect tie-in with Lucifer because Bryson's the villain, and I love it too.
Yeah,
I love watching Eric
like,
get absolutely fucking rattled about Bryson DeChambeau.
You're right. Bryson DeChambeau fits in perfectly with the douchebags at Piano Bar in downtown Royal Oak. You're right.
You're not wrong.
It works. Before we give our picks, I did want to ask Jay something. One, Jay, it's working. He's paying attention to golf. Just keep doing what we're doing. It's working. But two, Bryson won twice this year, both times beating out Matt Wolf in the final round. Probably a little coincidental that the last time Bryson's going to play for a month, they give him the first-round pairing with Matt Wolf for 2 days.
They're giving the people what they want and what they need right now. I've got no problem with that.
You love Matt Wolf. Are you almost upset that they really did put the bombers? Cameron Champ, another guy I forgot to mention, big bomber on the PGA Tour. So they really did put this, you know, bomb squad out there. That sounded weird to say.
Yep, sure did.
I don't want to take too much away because I think I already know who he picks. So, Jay, you go first here. Your group to watch this week.
So probably not where you think I was going to go, but I'm going with Bryson, Wolf, and Champ. Because Bryson is the current status of PGA. Wolf is the underdog of PGA, in my opinion. And Cameron Champ is the future at a ripe age of 22. I think he played at Texas A&M. I think that's where he got his scholarship. So you've got the current, you've got the underdog, and you've got the future right there in one group. I love Wolf's little giddy up in his swing, and Bryson, just the name sells itself right now, so it's an electric pairing, and I'm going with it.
Yeah, Cameron Champ, Texas A&M, it's been confirmed. So Jay, very nice, very nice.
Thank you.
Russ, over to you for your pairing of the week.
So I tried to come up with a pun for this one, but they were all pretty foul. I'm going with Fowler, Cantlay, and Nah.
Boo!
I know, boo me. I've earned it, and I love it. First off, Cantlay can lay it up here, right? He is the all-time earnings leader at Shriners. And who are the only two people that have been able to beat him? Oh, Bryson and Nah. So he's teamed up with one of the only people to beat him. He's the earnings leader. And I guess Ricky Fowler's there. Hopefully he doesn't drag the team down. I don't know. I've heard he's okay. So I'll go with those three.
Solid.
Do I hate Russ's pick? Nah. I actually am going with...
There we are.
Kevin Na, Patrick Cantlay, and Ricky Fowler was my choice. But listen, I can adapt. I can make changes. It's not that hard. I'm going to actually go right down the middle then. I'm going to go Jason Day, Hideki Matsuyama, and Sergio Garcia. All three of these guys have been right there in tournaments for the last couple of months. All of them are poised to break through. Jason Day, if his back's healthy, which he's had a lot of back problems over the last couple of years, this guy could be the best golfer on the planet when he wants to. Just a bomber of the golf ball, has an amazing short game in putting. Hideki is Japan's hero. They just love him over there. And if Sergio has to be there, Sergio has to be there. I'm not a big Sergio fan, but oh well, it happens. So I'll go with Jason Day, Hideki Matsuyama, and Sergio Garcia. All right, guys. Go ahead, Russ. Or go ahead, Jay.
Kyle, I'm going to offer one thing. I'm trying to see if this is going to be a reoccurring thing to see how big of a hole I can dig myself in. So this is where I would like to entertain the gamble of the week. Eric and Russ, you guys both teamed up originally for the same pairings. I'm down two units, if you will, because I've lost two bets in a row.
Yeah.
I want to have a two-unit bet that I can get one of my three guys to win on the weekend compared to one of your three guys that you've selected. If neither win, it's just a wash. We just call it off. But I want to get out of my hole and get back at the even playing field. Give me two to get back to even by having one of my three win versus your three. To win it all.
We're picking one of the three ahead of time.
I'll make you do. No, I'll make you do. You go three against six, and I'll take that. One of your three wins over any of our six picks between Hideki, Jason Day,
Garcia.
Yeah, or.
Deal.
If your three guys, if any one of them wins over our six, you're out of the hole.
And if not, if your six win versus my three, then I'm double down, I'm four down, damn close to owing you guys beer.
You'll go four in the hole, yep. Yep.
Deal? I'll take that.
Deal?
Right. I'll take that if you'll take it.
No, I'll take it. We got a deal.
I'm just writing this down.
Yeah, Russ is the bookkeeper for us. So if Russ ever goes missing and Jay no longer pays off his debts, we know what happened. He Patrick Bateman.
Bateman thing again. I killed the scribe. He's no longer in service.
All right, so
I've been called first.
Like I do in these cases, we're going to talk hockey, so I'm going to hand it over to people far more intelligent than I. Red Wings had their draft, or the NHL had the draft. Red Wings made their picks the last few days. I want to lead it off with this. Did the show with Darren McCarty and Sean Bellegian earlier today. We discussed it. And my question to them was, I get it's a seventh-round pick. I get it probably doesn't mean anything. But, Russ, thoughts on Chris Draper drafting his own child into the Red Wings organization?
So when it first happened and it was their last pick after making 10 other selections, I went, hey, cool moment. There was maybe a 5% chance at best, no matter who they took, that they would be any kind of an NHL player. So for Draper in his first draft as the director of amateur scouting to be able to do something like that, pretty cool. Plus, that we did confirm that is not one of Draper's sons that pooped in the Stanley Cup. Okay. So he's okay. It was not him.
He's the good one. Gotcha.
Yeah, it was the older one. It was the older brother. So that part made it okay. What kind of soured it is they then traded back up, trading away next year's seventh-round pick to get back in there to take Chase Bradley, which reeks of, what the hell were you doing? We had someone we had to take. Why did you do that? He could have been a UDFA, like some of Chelios' kids were. You still could have had a cool moment. Look, we're talking about a seventh-round pick at the end of the day. It doesn't matter. But it reeks of nepotism, like much of the rest of the NHL draft did. Not the only former NHL player that the Wings, or former NHL player's son, the Wings took today. Certainly not the last one drafted. There was at least a dozen of them. So it smells like nepotism to me.
On draft or on jersey day, does he ask for 33?
Oh, God.
I hope they say no.
He can take 35.
Oh.
All right, Jay's
sitting on the grave.
Yeah, Jay's had enough, so I guess he wants to get into it. Obviously, Jimmy Howard, not here anymore. Daly, not here anymore. Erickson, not here anymore. You guys said it. I haven't found anything on it yet, and it might just be that I'm not looking that hard. Abby, not here anymore?
Correct. Bought out.
Bought out. Yeah. So all these guys gone. Obviously, draft picks are you know, we'll have to discuss them. But I want to ask you both, and Jay, I'll let you go here, and then I'll let Russ take it over and go where he will. With all these positions being let go and spots being freed up, how much are we reading into Stevie doing something different? Because with Ken Holland, all those positions being emptied out would have meant we'll sign a bunch of old guys for next to nothing and replace them. How much are you looking into the fact that maybe Stevie's saying, okay, time for some of these young draft picks, Zadina, Valeno, maybe not Sider, but we can hope and dream. Time to start seeing some NHL playing time. Throw them in the ocean and see if they swim.
Yeah, I mean, he's made some moves already. I think Joe Valeno got loaned out to a team for the rest of the next season, so we won't be seeing Joe at all. Who are we guaranteed to see, though, Russ? Help me on that. I'm blanking.
I thought you said Zadina.
Who did we what?
That's it. Who? It was Zadina. Oh. Zadina has been mentioned that he'll be full-time status. Another thing I've been reading, which is a little bit of a different angle, is there's been rumblings, or at least people speculating that with our draft capital and our cap space, that he might offer sheet somebody. Someone who hasn't been signed yet, that he could take all that capital and cash and say, look, I'll pay you all that unless your team matches it, then come on over to, you know, Hockeytown 2.0. So I think there might be a combination of both. I'd rather him just promote from within and not give up that much assets, but there's people saying it could happen.
And someone has to explain this to me because you guys know far more than I do, and Russ, I keep telling Russ he's going to take over, and I promise I'm going to let him take over. All these people being let go, all this space being cleared, we've talked about it for over a year now, but we're getting to that point. Mantha still needs a deal, correct?
Correct. Mantha and Bertuzzi still need deals.
Still needs a deal, correct? Maybe a little bit more of him saying, maybe we're going to do this for both of you. Give them real money.
That's the thing. They had the money to begin with. There's so much cap space. I'm trying to pull up the exact number so I can give you the actual stuff, and it's almost there. So 53.3 against the cap right now. That's a cap space of $28.2 million. They're not even going to sniff $8 million, either of them.
Yeah.
You'll probably be closer to combined, you know, maybe like 9, 10 million, something like that. Because, I mean, you're looking at Larkin making 6.1. Maybe Mantha comes in a little higher than that because it's a newer contract, but Bertuzzi certainly not. And I wouldn't be surprised if they pull the same thing that Boston did, that they go, hey, you're going to make more than Marchand? You're going to make more than Bergeron? No, you're not, and push it down. So they'll come in. It's still going to leave them at least like $15 million to play with. There's a lot to do there. The offer sheet thing is a viable thing. The only thing that hurts it is that Iserman still has a good relationship with Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay is ripe for the picking for an offer sheet. And the offer sheet has been historically the biggest middle finger one GM can give to another. Mm-hmm. So for Iserman to give it to his protege, probably unlikely just from a human perspective, even though it would be delicious. It would be so much fun. You probably aren't going to get someone like Point because, hey, they'll match it and they'll figure it out with the other stuff. But like Cernak, right? Like maybe Sergachev, if you make it just right, there's a chance, but I wouldn't hold your breath on it. Stevie has given us a bit of a hint, though, for the first time on what he wants to do. He says 1 to 2 forwards, definitely one. 1 to 2 D, leaning towards two, and a goalie he's trying to go after in free agency. Because he wants to, beyond that, in his words, it's time for the young guys to come up and show what they have. I think he was looking directly at Svechnikov when he said that, because he's a guy that's right there and has to show out or he's gone really soon. But like, mm-hmm. Ernie got a 1-year deal. This is probably a prove-it year for him. He was an Iserman guy, but has not looked good with Detroit so far, and he's got one more year to show it. Maybe Hiroshi, who also just signed a 1-year deal, gets another chance. But there's an opening. The Wings are going to pick someone else up. Don't expect it to be anything crazy, but they've got money to do stuff like the Stahl trade. And that is what I would expect them more to do, to try and add more draft capital if possible. Because, hey, the team's not going to be good either way. And nobody's in free. Mm-hmm. Like, even if they brought in Petrangelo, who's not coming to Detroit because he wants to win a cup again, the team's still going to be bad, right? We know this. So, and Iserman knows this, and he said it. So
whoever we get, this is a cash. This is a cash transaction and nothing more for whoever we sign, because they know they're probably going to have to. Unless it's a young player, you're mm-hmm. looking at just taking the money you can get for the time you got left.
Right. The only exception would be some of these RFAs that weren't qualified because of the cap crunch. A guy like Anthony Duclair, who's still young. A guy like Carter Verhaeghe, who's from Tampa Bay and he's 25 and can be a solid bottom six center.
Yeah.
Right. I would expect that's going to be at least one of his ads. But, yeah, the otherwise, the placeholders to help the developmental guys be sheltered in the right structure.
Go ahead, Jay.
And one of the things, Russ, I like that you're bringing up is that all the pieces he wants to acquire, and then you and I talked about this a little bit, but in terms of priority, goalie's actually in the bottom for me. Because it's like, okay, you got this brand-new quarterback, you're Joe Burrows, you're still not going to win. I think the goalie idea has to be timed out correctly. I'd rather build up front with everything that we need for years and years over years and then hit that sweet spot with a goalie and then contend for a cup. You get that goalie now, what is the point? They're just going to get peppered with shots all day long because there's no defense in front of them. So that's why like we talked like that Grice, maybe Corey Crawford, because Chicago's not going to qualify him right now. I don't want the Holpies, the Khudobins, who just had a moment for Dallas because he didn't get qualified by Jim Neal today either. So I don't want a shiny goalie right now. I want to focus on defense and the forwards first before we get to goalie talk.
Now, you just mentioned a lot of guys like for potential goalies. Again, not you guys are the experts for hockey. But correct me if I'm wrong here, and if I am, I apologize. None of those goalies you just mentioned are spring chickens.
Correct.
Very true.
If I'm going to go after a goalie right now, to me, it does not make sense to go after a goalie. I get you're getting the name, but I feel like that's a majority of what you're getting. You're getting the name, maybe not the guy that's going to be there when this starts turning around. So again, it's kind of a rental for a bad team to at least say, oh, well, we have this position figured out, but eventually you're going to have to get it figured out again. I'd rather go after the guy who you can put in a winged wheel jersey and say, okay, get used to that jersey. You're going to wear it for the next 10 years.
The problem is that guy's not there. He's especially not there in free agency right now. Going through the top UFAs just by games played, you have Braden Holtby, who's 30, right? Yeah. And he's maybe the youngest, right? Markstrom's also 30, kind of a sordid pass. He just really started to blossom. Then you got Corey Crawford at 35, Mike Smith at 38, Craig Anderson at 39, Aaron mm-hmm. Dell at 31, Thomas Greiss at 31, Lundqvist at 38, Khudobin at 34. That's not historically how people have been able to grab goalies. Now, maybe you can do what Columbus did and go to Latvia and sign two of them somehow, and then you have your guy like that. And to your point, yes, I think they should be exploring the international goalie market like that and trying to find pieces, because right now there isn't a goalie of the future, and you're not. It's very difficult to find one unless you're already competitive through free agency.
I like that. If you're going to go, and I'm going to use this name because it's staying in my head because Jay mentioned it, Corey Crawford. If you're going to go get Corey Crawford, that's fine. Get him, pay him what you need to pay him to, you know, keep him happy and keep him here. But I need to see behind the scenes that there is someone you're bringing in and saying, okay, Corey, you're here. This is the guy. But this guy, we're not going to let this guy get shell-shocked for 5 years while we're terrible. We're going to bring you in. We're going to pay you. You're going to be our goalie. But we want this guy. This guy knows in 4 or 5 years or however long the development takes, whether it's faster, you're going to be our goalie. You're our guy. We just need you to have some time in the organization to learn, to get better, to improve. Now, if I see that, I'm great. I just need to see that part. I don't want Corey Crawford with no behind the scenes, because that just tells me you're renting a guy. But eventually, when all the forwards and the defensemen are where they need to be, that we can actually say, maybe not a Stanley Cup, but we can make runs into the playoffs, I want to know that there's a goalie there. Because otherwise, when Corey Crawford hangs him up, you're back to square one looking, and you haven't developed any.
Mm-hmm.
So to that point, they actually tried to do something like that, but just in Grand Rapids, with Philip Larson. He left college, had his career at Denver, and then they brought in Calvin Pickard, who by NHL standard, not good. AHL standard, probably equivalent to what Corey Crawford would bring you in the NHL, right? He's a solid veteran guy. He's been there. He's been around. And he's going to be able to take some tough matchups, mm-hmm. right, and not fall flat on his face. So the organization has used that blueprint before. In a couple years, hopefully next year at best, when Philip Larson is ready, they could follow that exact blueprint. And unless they have some secret trove of goalies somewhere else, I don't know where they're going to get the young goalie to try and do that. They did just pick up Jan Bednar in the fourth round, if we're going to talk about the draft for a second. Mm-hmm. A big old 6'4 athletic goalie, which seems to be Yzerman's M.O., right? We've seen Vasilevskiy. We've seen all the late-round guys that he's taken with the Wings already. They're big, right? And they're athletic, and that's the trendy goalie right now anyways. So it's possible, if I'm being optimistic, that goalie of the future is in the system between Larson, between Petruzzelli, and Bednar. You've got no idea, because goalies are voodoo, though.
Yep. that's the witchery. Like, Thomas McCollum was supposed to be that hotness years ago. He never elevated out of Grand Rapids. Yep. He never actually took that center stage, and he just became, you know, Grand Rapids goalie. So that's why I'm saying, to bring it full circle, I think we got to park the bus on goalie. Even though I want that, like I want a new quarterback for the Lions, we got to park that point because we're not there yet.
It's fair.
Well, to your quarterback metaphor, I think it's good practice to draft a goalie every year. Maybe it's the third to fifth round, but every year, just like a backup quarterback, right? To cycle through, because maybe you hit gold. Because you only need to hit gold once or twice, maybe every 7 years, right?
Yes.
To have your guy. So keep shooting.
Justin's going to hate this. And it's been about a couple of months since I've mentioned him. No one drafted Tom Brady in the sixth round thinking he was going to be a starting quarterback. But guess what?
Oh,
it worked out. And now I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying I agree with Russ. It's good practice. You kind of, it's weird to say, but you kind of do. Basketball is really the only draft that you don't do this in, because you get two picks. That's it. There's no eighth round. Baseball, there's 277 picks. You can draft 5 or 6 teams in one draft worth of talent, but you still, whether you need it or not, you still take that player. Same with the NFL, and now obviously with NHL. I mean, you look at it, they drafted like 7 forwards and 7 defensemen in this draft, so it's like one of these has to work. We have play of the week, but before we do that, we said we're going to talk about this draft. I'm going to lead off with the only one I know anything about, and that's obviously 4th overall pick. Lucas Raymond, I want to get your guys' opinion on this, because to me, again, this is the layman talking, I kept seeing the blue line needing to be addressed immediately. I asked you both when this happened. Is this taking best available, or is this actually taking someone who two, 3 years from now, we can say, this is why we drafted him, Russ?
No, I think it's more of the latter. And I think you get yourself in trouble drafting for need at the top of the draft, because if you miss Edmonton, mm-hmm. It stings a lot. It's much more palatable to hit on a position you don't need than to miss at a position you do need, because then you're behind twice. And Lucas Raymond is very much we need a center, we'll take a center. We have bad defense, we need defense. Oh, our goalie situation sucks, let's take a goalie that we won't see for 5 years. This was a guy who will come in and he is supposed to just be a talented player. He can sit on the second line, maybe, probably in time, jump up to the first line based on roster construction at the time. But he actually, if I can throw a curveball, he does fit a need. A very specific need that this team has seriously been lacking, and that's on the power play. He is a power play specialist, and the way he sets up his passing, his creativity, he's for Team Sweden, he's run the power play. In Frölunda, the men's league that he plays for in Sweden, he averaged less than 10 minutes a game. However, he was still getting power play time. So they didn't recognize that he should be a full-time player, but they still recognize his prowess on the power play. Carl Hirose came out of Michigan State and was running the Wings power play 2 weeks later. That's how much of a need this is. This is a guy that will fill that for years to come. So in that way, maybe not a conventional need, but it did fill a need while still taking a guy who's going to be good.
So you're saying that Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and Taylor Hall were all misses? I can't believe
Taylor Hall wasn't.
Taylor Hall wasn't. That's for sure. Taylor Hall got the hell out of there.
Yeah.
Jay, but over to you. Looking from the fandom side of it, they go out, and again, I'm not trying to oversell the fact that I don't know much about hockey. I feel comfortable talking about it. But when you look at the draft, and it's just weird because I feel like being a football fan, you rarely ever see, unless you're you're a fan of the Lions in the early 2000s, them going wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver with every first-round pick. It's kind of like that with hockey. You see forward, 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 forward. And it's like, don't we have enough of these? Like, put the puck in the net. I feel like that's what all of these guys do very well. We have a lot of them. I get that's great, but at some point, we need to start addressing other things, not to take anything away from Lucas Raymond. I hope he's a great player. Watching highlights, seeing game film, he looks like a great hockey player. But it's just weird to say, at what point do you need to look at Yzerman and go, you done yet? Anything else you want to go for?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that's the fan and the couch. Like, we're armchair sports talk. We're doing this from the couch, right? Fair. That's the couch perspective that, like, you can go back like 5 or 6 podcasts ago. I was like, goalie, 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 goalie. Give me the goalie. Howard, you blow. Get the hell out. But in reality, you have to draft what you can in front of you. And I didn't even look at Lucas Raymond, to be honest. I knew the name. I saw it on paper. I saw it online. I was watching Rossi. I was watching some of these other wingers that went. But getting Lucas Raymond is exactly how Russ just described it. And when I watched his videos, here comes the couch perspective, him taking wrist shots and one-timers, dropping to a knee like he's fucking Brett Hall, put that in my coffee. Like, I Hockenson's going to be the next Gronkowski. This is Raymond is going to be the, like, I'm not going to say that. He's not going to be the next Hall. But I enjoy what's happening. And the fact that we took a guy who was getting sub 10 minutes of time on his own team, and we're like, yeah, you're coming with us. That's fine. And the report was out that he's going to spend at least 2 seasons. Oh, I'm sorry. That's the Russian goalie. The Russian goalie's 2 seasons in the KHL. I think he's going to be assigned for a year or maybe even a year or two as well to develop, get a little bit bigger in stature, not in height, but I'm fine with it. So it does suck we're not getting that flashy new toy, but I mean, I trust Yzerman.
Yeah, but that's the thing. We're still waiting to see the flashy new toys from previous years. So I get the let's not rush him into a wing wheel jersey right now. We have other pieces. But I also think it kind of gives you that thing of we got to see what Zadina can do. Like you said, Valeno, not going to see him this year, but eventually we'd like to see what he can do. We want to see what Sider can do, because then you can look at it and go, here's where we need you to be really good. We've got this. We've got this. We need you working on this to complete the puzzle, Russ.
Yeah, and I think we're going to get our shot with Zadina, who's supposed to be a full-time, to actually be good. Then 2 years, it's time, right? Last year was Moritz Seider, not a forward, for the record. So he did do that.
I know. I'm just trying to make the case.
And if this was a regular offseason, I think we would see at least 40 games of Moritz Seider this year. What was nice about him is he played in a men's league at 18, right? So he was used to playing against larger, more experienced competition. In some cases, former NHLers. Lucas Raymond is the same way. I feel like I had to put context this. He played less than 10 minutes because he was playing for Frölunda's men's team, not the junior team that most of the other members of the draft class would have played for. So he's already playing against bigger, stronger opponents. He's going to be able to make that transition sooner. I don't think it's this next year. But the year after that is in play for Lucas Raymond. And we could be seeing that shiny toy sooner than later compared to some of his, you know, his contemporaries there. Certainly earlier than we would see any goalie. Because the little thing no one likes to talk about with Askarov is his team really likes to throw money at their guy, at their young players especially, to keep them as long as possible. And it's worked. It's been a long time. Kuznetsov didn't come over right away. That's why.
And that was like the first report out of Nashville. Oh, he won't be here. He won't be here for 2 years. Don't ask. It was like, oh, did you have to break that today?
and if they're telling you that now, that's minimum.
Yeah.
Oi.
All right. Well, we're coming to the end here, but before we do, we wanted to make sure we got play of the weekend. Lots of craziness throughout this week. I'm going to lead off with my fun play of the week because it's just craziness. Going to the Corn Ferry Tour. A lot of great like talent down there. It's fun to watch. It's actually fun to watch these because these are the guys we're going to be talking about in 3 or 4 years when they can establish themselves, get their cards. If my internet decides it wants to work. A fun story though this week. A guy named Evan Harmeling hasn't won on the tour. Trying to get his opportunity. He made headlines for two reasons. One, he won the tournament. Great for him. Two, he wore the same clothes 2 days in a row, head to toe, didn't change a single thing. He was very superstitious, and it said in the press conference afterwards, I played really well. I don't really own any other golf pants. So I got home, I did my laundry, and I figured this looks pretty good. Let's do it again. So wore it 2 days in a row, and guess what? Won the tournament. A lot of jokes been thrown around. This guy might just want to go buy a white visor, yellow shirt, and gray pants and just stick with it all the time because it's going well. And he even said afterwards, he goes, I won this week. I might be able to go buy a couple pairs of pants now. So it's just that thing of it's superstitious, but it's fun. And it's a guy realizing this is his moment. Like, he may never win again. I hope he does. It's fun, but he may never win another tournament. But in this moment, everybody's talking about him. Everybody's paying attention to him, and he's embracing it, and he's loving it. So I enjoyed that. I thought it was a good time. Heading over to my play of the week. We talked about the Cleveland Browns earlier, and as you guys know, there's nothing I love more than a trick play. So to see a little trickery on a team that's they're having fun, they're trying to make plays, was great, and mine sounded a little something like this.
Cleveland, it's a bomb from Landry to Beckham, 37 yards and a score.
Little end around from Odell Beckham, or from Jarvis Landry throwing to Odell Beckham. It was a great time. It was cool to see. That's my play of the week. Over to, you know what? We'll let Jay go. Jay, over to you. Play of the week.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Landry, I believe he said.
Sorry about that.
Landry said that he basically threw out his back throwing that ball, which I thought was hilarious. Speaking of hilarity, is that a word? Hilarity? Someone fact check that? Hilarity? Good? Great. I didn't know. I use words without even knowing what they mean sometimes. Speaking of hilarity, my play of the week is going to Green Bay. Let's try this one. Tanyan? I'm going to go with Tanyan. He was a undrafted player on the practice squad for the Lions, and he somersaulted his ass over to Wisconsin and started somersaulting his ass, catching touchdowns from Aaron Rodgers. So it sounded like this, and it was hilarious.
This is how bad it's gotten for the Atlanta Falcons. They're just trying to tackle guys, and they still can't keep them out of the end zone.
When we talked about the fact that it's a slippery field out here, and you saw Jamal.
So Atlanta can't stop anyone to begin with, but you were doing somersaults in Green Bay. Over to my funny play of the week, West Virginia's special teams, going college football. No idea who the hell these players are. Don't care. I'm rocking a West Virginia background in my picture right now. I don't understand how this happens in football, and maybe I'm just naive, but when the only goal on special teams is catching a ball, and maybe you field it, maybe you pretend to catch it, maybe you wait. Like, there's only a couple options. It's like playing tic-tac-toe and trying to put a chess piece right in the middle of the table. You don't nail your own dude when your main goal is to catch the ball and try to advance the ball, and it sounded like this.
Very late. And a muff on the field, and his own man ran into him. And the ball caromed to get away.
So just as much as I'm going to get out of the way so Russ can do his plays, get out of the man's way. Let him catch the damn ball.
Speaking of getting out of the man's way, my funny play of the week is Tyler Hero defending LeBron James on the fast break. This was such a good flop. Oh, that it made soccer players around the world envious. Tyler Hero, 2 years removed from high school, must have taken some acting classes because this was so good that everyone assumed LeBron put him in the stratosphere. And let's just listen to it.
Butler, here comes the double team. Back out Robinson, stolen by James. James drives, goes inside, and throws it down.
You have to look it up because the words don't do it justice to how far and enthusiastically he threw himself. But my actual play of the week, I'm going to go a little unconventional here. First off, I'm going to say Ottawa did something well. Not something you hear very often. But the third overall pick, throwing it to Alex Trebek to announce the draft pick. How about that? Beauty. I think that is the answer. What is beauty, actually, is the answer.
Here is the host of Jeopardy, Alex Trebek.
Thank you, Johnny. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Jeopardy. Our category today is the NHL. And here is the clue for you. With the third pick in the 2020 NHL draft, the Ottawa Senators choose this player. The correct response, who is Tim Stutzel?
All right, yeah, that's not a bad play of the week. I kind of like it. As always, we'll put that up on Twitter here in the next day or two, and feel free to vote. Lots of crazy ones this week. I mean, how often can you say we've got a gadget play, a guy running into each other, and, oh, by the way, Alex Trebek made it on Armchair Sports Talk. That doesn't happen very often, guys.
No, it should happen more.
I'm down. I'll get Alex Trebek on every day of the week if you want. What is that's the right answer? That's how I see it.
The Daily Double.
Yeah, the Daily Double. There you go. Another great show. I'd like to take all the credit, but I can't. These two, the best of what they do, absolutely carried the show today. My thanks to Mr. West Virginia over here, Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus. Another great one, buddy.
Hey, I was a fan for West Virginia for one day, and I can't wait for free agency tomorrow. So we'll be hitting the Twitter hard, I bet.
Oh, absolutely. And the stat man, Russ Ivanek, breaking down hockey left and right and accepting that Patrick Bateman, a.k.a. Justin Marcus, is probably going to try to clear debts in a not-so-conventional way.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that, but I do look forward to talking to you guys. And if I can, the answer is things that made this episode enjoyable for me. Answer, what is Red Wings and red wine? Have a good one, boys.
By the way, he had a full glass of wine when we started this, and he
just
took the final sip. As always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.